Welcome to the Deepish Thoughts NFL Draft Podcast. I'm Chris Warbordell. I'm joined by our NFL Draft guru, Eddie Hunt. Eddie, thanks for coming to talk NFL Draft with us.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk about the draft, and it's only, maybe 2 weeks away now, huh?
Yeah, a little bit less. 2 weeks from today, we will be on day three of the 2017 NFL Draft, and that is certainly not the most exciting day.
Yeah. I think this is kind of the anticipation time. It's kind of interesting because this is the time when a lot of the teams are starting to kind of, you know, put that false information out.
And yes.
You sort of don't know who's really interested in who and who's not interested in who. And, you know, kind of an example is kind of like the whole Jabril Peppers thing. And, you know, the Steelers kind of saying they're interested in him. I kind of don't believe it, but you know, it's kind of fun to kind of talk about all these types of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Anshu and I talked about this a little bit on the show on Thursday, and his point was specifically tied to Jabril Peppers. You know, if you're interested in a guy, why would you ever come out and say you're interested in a guy?
Yeah, I don't really see. I mean, being a Steeler fan, I always see them kind of, you know, the guys they always draft in the first round are either guys that are, you know, sort of pro day dinner type guys, or they're guys they have in for pre-draft visits, and they don't have him as, if they really liked him, they would at least have him as a pre-draft visit. So I mean, I think Jabril Peppers is an interesting prospect. I mean, just to talk about, I mean, I think he could do so many different things for your team. I mean, you know, the fact is he could be like a fourth running back. He could be, you know, a receiver. He could line up in the slot. You know, not to mention, I think he could fit as kind of that hybrid role back, defensive back, which I think is going to be, we're going to see more in the NFL going forward. You know, probably his best fit is kind of an in-the-box strong safety, but what are your thoughts on him?
Peppers is interesting because I worry about football IQ when it comes to Jabril Peppers. Why is a guy who is this uniquely athletic, this uniquely quick, this bad a playmaker? I mean, one interception over his time at Michigan. Why isn't he making plays on the defensive side of the ball by accident? That worries me.
Yeah, I mean, the one interception and the ball skills is kind of troubling. Also, the fact that I guess he's kind of sounds as if a strong safety or a hybrid safety, but he doesn't really have a true position in the
right
NFL. I think that's the biggest knock on him. And I mean, if you want a first round pick, you kind of want a guy who can kind of step in and, you know, play a specific position. I mean, you know, you go down the draft line, and, you know, we sort of know where all these players are going to play right away. And, you know, for a first round pick, it's just, we still don't know, you know, where he'd step in for a team.
Yeah. I mean, I like the added stuff that he theoretically brings to a team in the return game and as an option on offense. But if I'm drafting a guy, I want to know, especially if I'm drafting a defensive player, I want to know if he's going to help my defense. And I'm just not sure that Jabril Peppers is going to do that in any tangible way. I think the closest comparison in terms of play style is like Deion Buchanan, maybe? I think he's probably best fit as a small linebacker because he can't cover anybody.
Yeah. And I think another thing to talk about is, you know, the kind of depth of safety in this draft. I mean, even at the back end of the draft, you know, I mean, there's obviously the two top ones, which are Malik Hooker and Jamal Adams, and I'm really high on Adams. But, you know, as you go down the draft, sort of, you know, if you're picking sort of towards 20 to, you know, 40, you got kind of Melon Fonwu, you got Buda Baker you can look at. There's another one. You know,
can I tell you,
there's plenty of...
I love Buda Baker.
You're a fan of Buda Baker?
Absolutely love Buda Baker. This is an instinctual playmaker. I don't care about the size. I love this guy. I think he has a long NFL career.
Yeah, I wonder too, though, is, you know, I wonder how many teams are going to be kind of moving to that kind of dime defense. I mean, I kind of talked a little bit in one of my articles about how, you know, the NFL has become such a passing league and how we put such value on, you know, pass rushers and defensive backs. And, you know, you kind of have to think that the six defensive back fronts, you know, the dime back fronts, I mean, how common they're going to be. And a guy like Buda Baker, can kind of step in and be, that sort of third safety, that kind of rover safety, or he can kind of, I've even heard of him being talked about as kind of stepping in and being kind of that slot receiver.
Slot safety, yeah.
I think the, I, yeah, I mean, the thing is about the slot is, I mean, your slot receiver or your slot cornerback is essentially kind of a starter when you look at, how often teams are in what
Sure.
used to be sub-package football. Yeah. And so, I mean, I think just the value of defensive backs, and sometimes, your third or fourth, your fifth or sixth defensive back are much more valuable than, let's say, in 1999 or something like that.
Yeah, and a guy, I think a guy like Desmond King makes a lot of sense in this modern NFL.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of mocked as like a first round guy, and then I guess he didn't have the greatest combine. He didn't have the highest 40 time, and that kind of knocked him back. But he's more kind of the zone, and he seems like more of the zone instinctual kind of corner. It seems like there's kind of two safeties in this draft. There's this sort of sort of man cover type of safety, stay with the, which is very deep and very important. And then there's kind of the zone instinctual kind of Marlon Humphrey type. I'd probably put Desmond King in that sort of category. I think the thing is though, is that man cover corners are kind of becoming more valuable in today's NFL.
Sure.
I don't see many teams kind of dropping into zone. I think the zone is something that teams are mixing in, but I don't know if I think teams are more looking for like the Sidney Jones type or the Gerrion Conley or that kind of like man press corner type.
Yeah, but they're at such a premium. Everyone would love to have those guys, but it's hard to get those guys.
True, true. Yeah, I mean, and also too, I mean, when you talk about interceptions, I mean, these instinctual guys like Marlon Humphrey or they can provide turnovers for your team, which we kind of talk about in today's NFL is like how many games do we see kind of end favorably or negatively based on just kind of the turnover record. I mean, when you take two evenly matched teams and you see who wins the turnover battle, that sometimes just tells you who wins the game. So I mean, that's the other case for an instinctual zone kind of type corner.
You're right, though. This is it's a very, very deep safety draft with, you have guys like Marcus Williams, who people are really high on, and Marcus May, and the kid from the Jenkins kid from Florida, and you have the Josh Joneses and the Eddie Jacksons and the Justin Evans, and if you want to go sleeper down a little bit more, you have a guy like Josh Harvey Clemens at Louisville, who 2 years ago, people thought was going to be a first round pick, and things just didn't quite work out. But incredible safety class.
Yeah, I mean, especially the two guys at the top. I mean, I think we should at least touch on those guys. I mean, Jamal Adams. I mean, that guy has the best instincts I've seen in, a long time. And they talk about him as being, such a team leader and stuff like that. I mean, I think there's not a level you can take him high enough. I mean, other than Cleveland, I mean, where else would be too high to take him?
The knock on Adams, though, is that he just doesn't make plays. You hear a lot of, he's not special. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I think he does. I mean, I think he's kind of a high risk kind of player. I mean, when I kind of watched the film on him, I kind of noticed that he was a more the type that, if anything, he would kind of over pursue and sort of guess at plays. And I think that plays well to kind of the NFL, where he can sort of be more of a playmaker type. I don't know if I agree with that.
I read on Twitter this week somebody was comparing Jamal Adams to Landon Collins. You don't take you certainly don't
I think he's more the.
you don't take Landon Collins with the second pick in the draft.
Yeah, I think that one of the values of Jamal Adams is he can help you in run support too. I don't know if Landon Collins is as much of a in the box safety.
Fair enough. And what are your thoughts on Malik Hooker?
Oh, I mean, he's great. I think what was amazing about him is they never threw his way.
Yeah.
And you're talking about Marshawn Lattimore and Gerrion Conley, who could be the two top corners taken off the draft. and they were not even throwing to his part of the field. You can kind of see on the tape, it was like teams were throwing, were trying to throw, you know, sort of the boundary corners or the seam, but they were really never going to the center field, which kind of shows how much respect he got in college football.
No question.
Yeah, I think he's a, I mean, I think they're different types of players. I think Hooker's more the center fielder type. I think if you use Adams well, you kind of use him more as an in the box type of guy and have him more kind of, you know, do some different things, maybe rush the passer, maybe, you know, kind of be that, you know, sort of fourth or fifth linebacker, you know, mix in coverage on tight ends. Whereas Hooker is definitely more of a deep safety type.
We live in a world where playmakers are just so valued. And, you know, it's tough to argue that Hooker isn't more of a playmaker than Adams.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in a passing league, I guess the thing that I liked about Adams was that he just seemed to check every box. It didn't seem like he really had a lot of weaknesses. And I mean, I think that you could use him in so many different ways. I didn't really see like a way. I mean, kind of when, you know, these teams kind of watch film on different players, you know, that you know, you have a week to prepare against these guys, you try to find their weakness. And I don't really see like an apparent weakness or something to take advantage of when it comes to Jamal Adams.
All right, well, let's start at the very beginning here. And this is something that, again, Anshu and I talked about a little bit the other day. I'm very interested to hear your opinion. And that is how this quarterback class stacks up. What is your top five quarterback rankings as of right now?
Mitch Trubisky is definitely number one.
Why definitely?
I just think he, I think he kind of, he can sort of read the field, and I think if he can read his progression, and I think with a strong arm, that gives you the best chance of being a franchise quarterback. I think football IQ and arm strength are the two things that you need to be a franchise quarterback.
Okay.
So I give that to Trubisky. I think he is kind of a hot and cold kind of player. You know, he played in a very passer-friendly offense. So his production's a little inflated. You know, I don't think this is like the best quarterback class. I mean, if you're, I mean, I'm more of a Steeler guy, so I want the Browns to take a quarterback. But I mean, this isn't the draft to take a quarterback.
No.
Yeah, he's definitely a risky pick. But yeah, he's definitely my number one. Two, I mean, you said Deshaun Watson, Deshaun Kizer. I don't know. Deshaun Watson's more of kind of the immediate guy, whereas Deshaun Kizer is more the guy you sit for 2 years and have him learn the offense and coach him up.
But
I'd
that
probably
guy
put
doesn't
Kizer too, just because
exist.
I think he's.
That guy doesn't exist as a first round
Yeah.
pick anymore.
You don't think so?
No, I
Yeah.
mean,
I mean,
with very few teams that have the luxury of letting a first round pick sit for 2 years. Now, I actually suggested that Kizer would be a good fit to Pittsburgh at 30 because that is a team that is going to be able to let him sit, and obviously Arizona is another team like that. Maybe New Orleans is a team like that. But there are very, very, very few teams that can let their first round pick sit for 2 years. And also with the rash of injuries at the quarterback position, it seems like every single rookie quarterback who is drafted in the top 3 or 4 rounds gets his chance to start a game as a rookie.
yeah, I mean, we saw that. I mean, I actually live in Colorado and sort of watch the Broncos media. They're kind of the local media, and the thing they were going to say with Paxton Lynch is, "We're going to wait on him. We're going to wait on him." And you know, they went with Trevor Siemian, who, you know, didn't really have a big name, but they was kind of liked in the local market, and they gave him a shot. Then he gets hurt, and all of a sudden, you really have no other option but to go
Right.
Paxton Lynch. I mean, that's another problem too, is that if you're really afraid to put him on the field, and then, you know, your quarterback gets hurt, which, I mean, in the NFL, I mean, it's not totally unlikely. You know, that can present an issue of a guy, you know, having to step in when they're not quite ready.
Okay, so who comes in number two? I know this is two very different types of players, but who's number two for you?
I'd say Deshaun Watson, just because, you know, he's won the national championship. I mean, I don't think he's the greatest pick. Just because I thought he, you know, his production's a little overinflated by the team around him. I'm kind of high on Mike Williams, and you know, I'm not a really huge fan of the sort of running quarterback. I just think the guys who kind of have the 18-year careers in the NFL, franchise quarterbacks, tend to be, sort of more pocket passer types. You look at like the last four quarterbacks standing this year. It was New England, Pittsburgh, Atlanta, and Green Bay. I mean, those are all, guys who can sit in the pocket and, throw the ball all around the field. And I just don't see Deshaun Watson kind of has a different game. I mean, obviously I'm gonna root for him, but I don't see him being in that kind of Ryan, Rodgers, Brady, Roethlisberger mold.
Yeah, no, not at all. So then Kaiser at three.
Yeah, I put Kaiser at three. Four is Mahomes. Yeah, he kind of has the same thing as he's kind of has the same thing as Kaiser in that I don't know if he could start right away. He's kind of a high risk pick. I kind of worry with him with interceptions and I don't know. I mean, I do kind of see the upside in him being kind of like the Roethlisberger, being able to escape the rush type of thing and throw the ball all around the field. But yeah, I don't know if he's refined enough to be to be a safe pick. I mean, what's kind of your top five?
Well, yeah, I'll get to my five. Who's your fifth guy? Just to wrap this up.
I mean, I'm gonna say five is Josh Dobbs. I just like the fact that he gets the ball out quick. I think if there's like one thing that is so important with quarterbacks, it's being able to process information and being able to get the ball out quick. And I thought even watching a lot of SEC tape, kind of being watching guys like Jamal Adams. I mean, when I saw them play against Tennessee, I was just kind of surprised. It's like this guy really just makes decisions quickly, and I think that'll suit him well in the NFL. Who's it? Who would you
All
kind of
right,
put
so
in that
here's my
this
thing.
category?
Here's my thing is that I hate this quarterback class. I hate it. So in a class that I hate, I'm gonna take the guy with the biggest upside. And to me, the guy with the biggest upside is Pat Mahomes. Now, there's also a giant risk that he never gets anywhere close to it. But, luckily I'm not in a position where I'm in an NFL front office and I have to bet my life that he's gonna hit 90% of his potential, 95% of his potential. Because I think his potential is, he's very Favre when he plays football. He is very, very fun to play. He trusts himself, probably too much. He absolutely know well, absolutely believes that he can put the football anywhere on the field at any time. Does have outstanding arm talent. Maybe not Trubisky, but still outstanding arm talent. Better than Watson, better than any of that second tier of quarterback. So I'm gonna gamble on upside with him. Now, we've talked about this before. You're a Steelers fan, my girlfriend's a Browns fan. And so I've watched a lot of Cleveland Browns football. And there's some talk that the Cleveland could be interested in trading up to 20 with Denver. To me, that would be a spot where they could potentially take Mahomes. You let him sit behind Kessler for a year and just see how that shakes out. And there's also an interesting dichotomy between Cody Kessler and Patrick Mahomes in that they are the complete opposite football player. So that would be fun to have on a roster and see those two, going at it. So I would go Mahomes one. I would go Trubisky two because of the upside. I would go Watson three because he's got a fairly high floor. He may not be great, but I think he's going to be serviceable. Kaiser scares me. I mean, he sub 60% completion percentage on a good team. Like he led a good team to losing games. That worries me. I did like his comments this week. About the in terms of what Brian Kelly had to say, Brian Kelly saying, he's not ready, should have stayed in school. And Kaiser came out and said, it's honestly the truth, or it's probably the truth, one of those two. I like that. It shows a little bit of self-awareness and it shows he's not going to be fazed by things. Certainly has talent, the physical ability is there, but we haven't seen it on the football field. And there's only, I'm trying to think of that old UNLV quarterback, Jason Thomas, I think. Like what separates him from a guy like that? Like he looks like he should be great. He does. You watch him throw a football, it's impressive, but you watch him play a football game and it's far less impressive. Five, there are. It's a weird group of muddled prospects and nobody really jumps out. I like the upside of Brad Kaya because I like the physical ability and I like what he can become. You could talk me into a lot of people there. You could talk me into Dobbs. You could talk me into Peterman. But I'm going to go Kaya.
Yeah, I think the unfortunate thing for teams looking for a quarterback in this draft is that I don't see very often this sort of developmental quarterback who kind of sits on the bench and then all of a sudden seems to turn it around in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Aaron Rodgers, I feel like, is kind of the exception rather than the rule. I mean, you talk about quarterbacks, it seems like they either kind of show they have it or they don't. You know, a guy like Carson Wentz, I mean, he kind of showed right in the first three or four games that he could process information, he could be a franchise quarterback. I don't see a lot of examples of quarterbacks who, you know, really develop, you know, in a system and sit on the bench and then, you know, do that. I mean, we can kind of look ahead and think that, you know, 2018 is going to be a better draft year.
Yeah.
If you're a team like Cleveland and you're assuming you're not going to be good this year, I mean, there's so much depth in, you know, picking up defensive players, you know, Myles Garrett or Jonathan Allen, or, you know, they could even pick up a receiver like Corey Davis. Then, I mean, you kind of build the team around your quarterback and maybe stick with Osweiler for a year. And then, you know, 2017 is a year where you can sort of get that quarterback of the future. I would say I'd rather draft a quarterback next year and have him kind of come in and at least, you know, be a backup worthy or be a starter as opposed to, you know, developing a guy for 2 years.
Oh, not even a question. I mean, when you're talking about the 2018 draft, you're talking about a draft that potentially has, you know, seniors in Mason Rudolph and Luke Falk, juniors like, excuse me, there's something in my throat and I apologize. Juniors like Lamar Jackson and the kid from Wyoming, Josh Allen, and Josh Rosen. I like Fitzgerald from Mississippi State. I'm not a big Browning fan, but he's there too. And then potentially a redshirt sophomore in Sam Darnold. Like, that is a lot of high-level potential starting, you know, high-level starting quarterbacks. And this year, how many of these guys would go above anybody in this class if we had everybody available? 4, 5, maybe 6?
Yeah, I think when, like, we talk about all these our top five, I kind of have them all as kind of second round value types, you know, guys who are, you know, might be good quarterbacks in the NFL, but not really showing the potential. You know, there's definitely not an Andrew Luck in this draft class, or Carson Wentz or anybody like that.
Interesting that you mentioned Carson Wentz, who actually wasn't the first pick in last year's draft. The problem is, it seems like there are a lot of Jared Goffs.
Yeah. I mean, for so long it was, there was like a 3 or 4 year run. It was like Alex Smith and kind of in that area where just the number one team drafting was always taking a quarterback.
Yeah.
And no matter how good or bad they were, if they were the top quarterback in the draft, it was like almost kind of like given to them that, you know, they were the number one pick in the draft. I mean, I think teams are wiser now. And, being more of a Cleveland guy, who do you have as going number one? Are you on the Garrett train?
I'm more of a Cleveland guy than you, but I would not characterize myself as a Cleveland guy, just someone who has watched Cleveland Browns football. I'm very much a hardcore Philadelphia Eagles fan. But, you can't pass up on Myles Garrett number one. The only way I would pass up on Garrett is if somebody made it an absolutely absurd offer to jump up at number one. And that would include not dropping down more than 2 or 3, you know, maybe 4 spots, and picking up an extra first-round pick and a bunch of picks in this year's draft. This team has spent so long accumulating draft picks. They need to add high-level blue-chip prospects, and that's what Garrett is. And it's going to be interesting to see who falls to them at 12 because, you know, it's not unfathomable that a guy like Malik Hooker is there. It's not hard to see a scenario where a guy like Reuben Foster is there at this point. You know, you're going to have your pick of the cornerbacks and Conley and whoever the third corner is at this point. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of talent added to that team, and that's certainly a team that's going to be headed in the right direction very quickly.
Yeah, I kind of see Cleveland as kind of like the Boston Celtics of the NFL.
That's interesting.
Do you know what I mean? Where they kind of, you know, they're trying to accumulate a lot of draft picks, but at some point you kind of need that franchise quarterback.
Well, as a 76ers fan, I'm hoping that the Celtics don't get the opportunity to add that franchise player in this year's draft.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually grew up around Boston, so I'm a bit of a Celtics fan. But, yeah, I think they'll eventually. I think, you know, if they're going to win a championship, they'll have to get that star player. But anyway, do you want to go on to running backs, talk about running backs in this class?
Let's talk about running backs. This is an outstanding running back class, and it's very different types of runners at the top, too, with Fournette. And I don't, do you still have Cook as your two, or do you have McCaffrey as your two?
Oh, definitely Dalvin Cook. Despite the troubles on the field, I mean, he's outstanding. I think he could be sort of a vision runner. I think it was 14 that the Eagles are picking? I think that would be an excellent fit for them.
I could not
agree
more.
I think that would be an excellent. I mean, I think the fact that he's comparable to Leonard Fournette, it just shows, you know, how he would be, you know, in any other draft, sort of taken with, who was the year before, Gurley or Ezekiel Elliott, mm-hmm. or, I mean, he's kind of that. I put him in that kind of tier of a player. I don't know too much about the off the field stuff. I mean, I'm sure some teams will be okay with it. Some teams won't be, and they'll take him off their board. But yeah, I would say Dalvin Cook. I mean, Philadelphia also does need to, you know, address their secondary. So Conley could be the pick there. Fournette is definitely the number one. I mean, do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, no, I think that any talk of even comparing – look, Cook is a great running back. And like you said, in a lot of other years, he could potentially be the first one to come off the board. But Leonard Fournette is special. Leonard Fournette is – you know, you mentioned – I think you're actually underselling Todd Gurley. I think Todd Gurley is in that upper tier of running back prospects with Fournette, with Adrian Peterson. You know, with that type – I think he's that type of player.
Yeah, and so you talk about number three, you have McCaffrey. I mean, what are your thoughts on him?
I don't know. This is tough, and this is something I kind of have to talk myself into, and I wonder if psychologically I'm trying to do that because there's been a lot of talk linking McCaffrey to the Eagles at 14, and I just don't want to be in a situation where I'm ready to kill myself after another Philadelphia Eagles first-round pick a la Danny Watkins and so many others. You know, you like him. It's difficult to separate race when you're scouting players because we have all these preconceived notions that white, you know, first of all, there's so few white running backs. And second of all, they're more Danny Woodhead than anything else. But that isn't McCaffrey. McCaffrey is actually a very good between the tackles runner. He is a guy who will make people, you know, he'll bounce off of linebackers. He'll make people miss tackles. Obviously, he's as good as it gets in terms of catching the ball out of the backfield in this draft class. So, you know, I hate to fall into traps like that because you wonder if Christian McCaffrey is black, you know, is he thought of as being better than Dalvin Cook? And honestly, maybe. Honestly, maybe. So I can live with McCaffrey at three. After that, for me, it's really just throw guys into a hat and you can argue any name that comes out.
Yeah, I'm kind of a fan of Alvin Kamara. I mean, he kind of can do that same sort of, you know, line up in the slot. He can be a punt returner. You know, was talented. I know he kind of had a fall. What was it? He was at a major. He was at a top. Was he at Alabama or mm-hmm. something like that? And then he got kicked off. And then now he's with Tennessee. Or I think he, you know, finished with Tennessee.
Yeah.
I'd say with McCaffrey. I see him more, I don't know, I don't see him having the size to be sort of that kind of every down back. I kind of see him thriving more as kind of like a Jeremy Hill, like a Jeremy Hill and
Gio Bernard.
what's the other? Yeah, Gio Bernard kind of the system where he's kind of the lightning back next to kind of a thunder kind of thumper back. More of the kind of speed kind of play, quick plays, whereas maybe he would be better complemented with more of a power kind of runner. That's kind of where I see him.
I think the most interesting running back in this class is going to be Joe Mixon, because talent-wise, again, he's probably every bit as talented as the Cook and McCaffrey, but how are you willing to ignore the stuff that's happened off the field?
Yeah, I mean it's really hard to project, kind of, sort of draft next because we're not really sitting there watching the exchanges between the player and the coaches and how, whether he's the type of guy who can kind of sell to these teams that, yeah, I've learned from my mistakes or that's always kind of a wild card. We've kind of seen both where, guys like Jameis Winston, was able to sort of, despite being in trouble 3 or 4 times, he was able to kind of convince Tampa Bay, I can be the face of the franchise. I can really change, I can really, have a good image for the team and so forth. And, there have been other examples of guys who, have dropped like Shane Ray or, I mean, not to that level, but, I think teams are eventually sort of forgiving if you're talented. But if you're going to be a distraction or you're going to do something to really hurt the team's image, then, teams will pass on you.
Yeah, and
Yeah, I think
I do think Mixon, in his defense, like, he does come off as genuinely apologetic about what happened. Like, I believe that he's sorry. I believe that he's realized, he realized that that was an incredibly stupid thing, and regardless of the circumstances surrounding it, that's not the kind of thing that is okay on any level. I would bet Joe Mixon is not going to be a problem for an NFL team.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there is always that, sort of NFL shield that you always have to kind of protect. And I mean, his backstory isn't exactly what they want from a PR standpoint,
Yeah, but
but,
it doesn't matter. That's not up to the NFL.
yeah.
As much as they would
Yeah.
like it to be, Roger Goodell doesn't get to decide who is eligible to play football in the NFL. If you're good enough, you can play, and it's just a matter of is your good out going to outweigh your bad? I think Mixon's going to. I have faith in Mixon. Maybe more so than Kamara, honestly, because you're talking about such a limited sample size. For, another very, very talented player, very similar to Mixon, but such a small sample size with what he did at Tennessee.
Yeah, I think also too. I mean, I'd like to know more. I mean, I think teams will want to know more about sort of what happened where he was at a major program like Alabama. I mean, Alabama being the closest thing to being NFL football, where you have that kind of high pressure situation. And one way you could look at it with Kamara was he was young and he made a few mistakes and he sort of turned it around and came back and played for an SEC team. And another way to look at it is, and this could be a red flag for us. Do you have any sort of preferences as far as mid-round running backs?
I'll tell you who I don't like is Foreman at Texas. Because for as impressive as his size and speed are, he's just a horrendous run blocker and horrendous pass blocker. This is one of the worst blocking running backs that I've seen in a very long time, and I think that's going to really hurt him in terms of being able to get on the field. Mid round, I like McNichols at Boise State. A very, very productive, tough runner. I like Pumphrey at San Diego State, a guy who, can do a lot of things, although he's very much a specialty back. D'Angelo Henderson is a ton of fun at Coastal Carolina. And who else? I like Elijah McGuire a little bit too at Louisiana. Again, another guy who has been. He can run the ball, he can catch the ball, he's going to help you out in a lot of ways. Underrated blocker. Who do you like? Who are your mid-round potential steals at the running back position?
Yeah, no relation, but I'm definitely a fan of Kareem Hunt, just to being that kind of three down back type. I think he has the potential to kind of be able to pass block and, catch out of the backfield. I think that's going to be more and more played in today's NFL is, a running back who can also kind of, play the screen game. Who else do I like? I'm not a big fan of Marlon Mack.
Why?
I don't. I mean, I think he's an interesting player, but I don't know the fumbles and the fact that I mean, being he's sort of like 210. He's weighs in at like 210, but they sort of talk about him as like a scat back. And I mean, they just on one hand, you kind of worry like, does he really have the sort of the toughness between the tackles to sort of play, as a to kind of make it as an NFL player. I agree with you on Foreman. I'm not a big fan of Foreman. I think both Mack and Foreman are kind of fumble risks. I mean, I think the turnover game is so big and it's such a huge part of the NFL, and I think that's why those guys, won't go as high. Trying to think of another back that I like. I mean, I guess I like James Conner in the sense that I think he's like kind of a fourth or fifth round guy. I think he'd be kind of like that, high character guy who could kind of play special teams for you, kind of be that big bodied, sort of, on punt returns and kickoffs and so stuff like that. But yeah, obviously with mid round backs, there's always going to be some question about them. Even in a running back class this deep.
Anyone in particular you don't like other than Mac?
Yeah, I also agree with you on Foreman. I think being the fumble
Yeah,
guy,
no, I mean other than that, who?
trying to think.
'Cause I don't like Gallman. He doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, I guess when you kind of dig deep into this running back class, it seems like there's always kind of I don't know, they say it's a very deep running back class, but there isn't like one in the middle rounds that really like stands out for me as like, oh, this is the sleeper pick. And I don't really see a whole lot of ones that there's sort of mixed bags. I think a lot of the mid round backs, just my view.
Well, if we've done nothing else today, Eddie, it's that we've really thrown some cold water on the notion that some of these positions are deep, where the NFL, this is very much a running back class. It is getting a lot of hype. And, I see your point that while there's a bunch of names, maybe there's not a bunch of interesting names in the middle rounds.
Yeah. So what are your, I mean, I guess we have to talk about tight ends. What are your thoughts on the tight end class?
Yeah, well, we can talk tight end, and then we'll wrap up this first show. It's certainly an interesting tight end class. OJ Howard, I don't know how I feel because he looks great, he runs well, big, strong, put together, everything you want. Why wasn't he more productive at Alabama? Now I know that quarterback play was disastrously bad this year, but why was he not more productive?
I noticed something kind of strange. I almost think that they really tried to simplify the offense for
Hurts.
Alabama's quarterback, Jalen Hurts. They did something I've never seen, or I just don't remember a lot with a tight end, where they actually used him as almost like a screen receiver. I mean, I see a lot of like 2 yard outs, a lot of screen passes, and the fact that he's such an athlete that he can actually gain yards and gain a lot of points by through screens as a tight end is just quite impressive to me. But I think that's the exact reason why he didn't have the production. But if you kind of look at the tape, he seemed to, every time he was in the sort of intermediate to long routes, he seemed to get a lot of separation on these teams. So, I mean, and the other thing about him is that I think he's a very willing blocker, and I think he's a tough blocker. I think he stands out. I sort of watched his film, and I sort of watched Njoku from Miami, and I really noticed that I mean, people won't talk about the difference in their blocking abilities, but I think there's a big difference between Howard's blocking ability and Njoku. I think Howard is on another level than Njoku, who is on another level than Engram.
Well, Ingram's just bad.
But
Ingram's
yeah,
just a bad
more the
blocker.
move. Yeah, he's more the move tight end sort of matchup nightmare type, and I think Everett kind of fits in that mold too.
Absolutely.
The South Alabama guy. I think it'd be interesting. I mean, just kind of like a concluding remark is, I mean, for me, it's just kind of. I think it'd be interesting to see how the NFL evolved. You know, with all these move tight ends, is, you know, are we going to see, you know, bigger safeties, or are we going to see kind of more hybrids? And I think that'll be kind of a question for the future.
Yeah, and I mean, you're going to have to start game planning for that now. And how does that address? How does that affect how safeties are viewed? How linebackers are viewed in the draft process? It is very interesting. Let's finish this off with who are your top five? What's your top five rankings for the tight end position?
So definitely OJ Howard number one, and Njoku two,
mm-hmm.
Engram three, Everett four, and then I'm gonna go with Mayaka. I actually kind of like that guy George Kittle from Iowa. He's more the blocking type, and, you know, more the blocking type that'll evolve into the kind of receiver type. Actually, can I put Jake Button there? I'd say five is definitely Jake Butt. Yeah, I guess I'd have to say Jake Butt, just being the fact that, you know, despite, you know, when he comes back from being healthy, I think he'll be that kind of tough guy in the middle. But I do like George Kittle, but yeah, I'd say probably Jake Butt number five, and he's down there really just because of the injury.
Can I tell you that Kittle reminds me of Brent Celek, smaller guy, but just an outstanding blocker. He's an effort guy. Really like Kittle. But I'm going to go Shaheen at three, honestly. I agree with you, Howard and Njoku. You know, I worry about the value of strictly a pass-catching tight end where you're going to have to take Engram or Everett, and that's probably that second or high third-round area. So I'm gonna gamble that Shaheen turns into a more complete tight end. And put him at number three. I'll go Howard, Njoku, Shaheen, Engram, Everett. And again, you know, like you talked about with the running backs, and, you know, maybe we dashed that a little bit, but this tight end class is outstanding. This is a fascinating tight end class. And you don't say that very often.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, I mean, I sort of did my mock, and I looked at a lot of teams. I don't know how many teams there really have a huge need at tight end, but, I mean, there's really three guys who would go ahead again of, you know, like 2 years ago, would have probably have gone ahead against a guy like Max Williams.
Yeah.
But, you know, who, I mean, 2 years ago, tight ends were not even picked in the first round, and definitely ahead of, what was it, Hunter Henry was number one last year. I mean,
yeah.
There's three guys there who I would take over Hunter Henry. What do you think?
No, I agree completely. And we didn't even mention guys like Jordan Leggett, guys like Bucky Hodges, the Smith kid at Florida International. They're, in terms of both ready to play now and developmental guys, this draft is loaded.
Yeah, Sprinkle too. I think he's another one to watch.
That is, absolutely fair. Absolutely fair. And, you know, we'll see what happens with the Texas A&M, the Seals Jones kid, because there's a lot of talk he's going to end up a tight end. Yeah, it's interesting. You don't see interesting tight end classes come around very often, but we've definitely got one this year. So if you need a tight end, awesome year to be in that position, because you're going to have your choice throughout pretty much the whole thing. And, you know, it's much like, you know, I guess it's probably a show or two from now where we get around to talking about the cornerbacks, but boy, you are going to be looking at starting caliber cornerbacks into the third round. That group is loaded.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be impressed with how many press corners there are too. You know, man covered corners.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, Jordan Lewis. I know domestic violence is a big no-no. Well, I mean, for obvious reasons.
Yes, yes.
But, you know,
that's an understatement.
He's a good one.
Don't hit people.
He'll drop, but, I mean, you know, they were talking about him being a second-round guy. I like this guy, Chidobe Awuzie.
Uh-huh.
You know, obviously I went to CU, so, or I went to Colorado, so I'm a little partial to him. But I see him being both a kind of slot and kind of outside guy. This is a good slot class too. I mean, if you want that kind of man cover slot, I'm impressed with Tre'Davious White and, like I said, Lewis, Chidobe Awuzie.
Yeah, we'll
Then
have
there's
plenty of time to get into this when we talk about the cornerbacks in an upcoming episode. For the first episode of the Deepish Thoughts NFL Draft Podcast, I'm Chris Horvadell. Eddie, thanks for talking football with us today. This has been a lot of fun, and I look forward to us being able to get back at it very, very soon.
Yeah, me too. It's always fun to talk draft.
Cool. Thanks for listening, and we will see you back here real soon.